Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Business from the Bass Boat Podcast. And today, folks, we have a new presenting sponsor on Business from the Bass Boat Podcast. That is Rec Lending. As you guys know, Rec Lending has been a big supporter of the show. They have stepped up to the presenting sponsor for Business from the Bass Boat. Kind of a natural fit there, right? With what we do, talking business, talking boats, industry, all that kind of stuff. And so that has been a great announcement for 2024. But I hope everyone has followed along. We've got Derby season kicking off, opens, NPFL, Major League Fishing, all of it's happening. And it's an exciting time of the year. And for anyone up north, it's kind of like cabin fever, ice fishing. You can go south. You can always go south. If you're on the West Coast, you can always run down to Havasu. Tournament's going on, One Bass on Shasta right now. You could run over to Florida if you're in the Northeast. So there's a lot of opportunity. So anyways, without further ado, we've got a great show lined up. This is a regional sales rep for Garmin talking to Danny Thompson. And I can already tell by the background, we've got similar hobbies outside of bass fishing and electronics. But let's bring Mr. Danny in. Hey, what's going on, man?
How's it going?
Dude, you have it like... I try and look around at my little office and I'm like, oh, cool. I got an antelope and I got the capes coming back for that mule deer and whatever. And then I look at the back of your studio and I'm like, oh, I got some work to do. There's some awesome deer back there, man.
Yeah, no doubt. It, you know, if it was a 360 camera, we could get quite a few more in here. But, you know, it's funny because it's like work in the fishing industry and it's to support our deer hunting habit. And there's a lot of us like that. I mean, I was just down at a show in Nashville earlier this year talking to G-Man. And I mean, same thing, avid deer hunter, Andy Morgan. I mean, a lot of these guys that we work with on the fishing side are huge deer hunters because it's kind of the release away from, you know, the everyday grind of business on the fishing stuff that we do. But yeah, absolutely love that whitetail hunting stuff.
That's so cool, man. That is, that's good stuff. I've done some saddle hunting. I've done some tree stand hunting, on the river systems in Colorado and in Nebraska a little bit, but I have not been, that's not true. I've shot some whitetail does, but I've never connected on a whitetail buck, from an archery perspective or a rifle perspective for that matter. But man, it's so cool to me. Like I first time kind of rattling and watching a stellar 10 point come screaming in. It was the coolest thing I had ever seen. I was like, this is in its own right. Right. Like I like archery elk hunting. That's a fun time for me, but it was like, I'm feeling the same rush. All of that to me was like, this is another whole level of addiction of things.
Yeah, for sure. I love it. And, you know, obviously being in the Midwest makes it accessible, you know, like we don't have the elk like you do, but I mean, we've got some good whitetail hunting here.
That's so cool, man. No doubt about it. Well, dude, let's talk a little bit about just where you're at, in not only in the world, what you're kind of up to this time of the year, number one. And then let's talk about kind of how you got your start with Garmin, how everything connected there. But yeah, man, tell the folks where you're at.
So I'm a regional sales manager for Garmin. I've been doing this now for about 8-9 years, something like that. And I've kind of, you know, in a weird way, I was a mediocre student throughout school, and I just love hunting. I love fishing, and I knew that was absolutely what I wanted to do for a career. And so I've somehow found a way to always make that happen. And I mean, literally since age 10, I've been working at trap ranges and working for outdoor retail. And then I kind of got a marketing job with a big box retailer back in the day, and then that kind of led me to Garmin. So I've always found a way to stay in the outdoor industry, and you know, it's a lot of work, and you know, sometimes you could probably do a little bit better if you went other industries. But yeah, it's just so fun working in the fishing industry. It's funny because it's a small industry. I mean, we do a lot of money, and you know, support the outdoors, obviously, but it's a small industry. You know, a lot of people, you meet a lot of people, and everybody has a passion for what we do. So it's just such a fun, you know, career path to take. And, you know, I really do enjoy it.
Yeah, no, man, I think that it summarizes the outdoor industry so well of like there's a lot of volume that occurs in the outdoor industry, but it is a small group, right? Like you go to a show and you're like, these are the same guys that were here last, you know, like it's a very tight group of people. And, you know, you see guys trade brands and be in different places, but like, man, it is a small group of people that make this whole ship run.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously I'm located in central Minnesota, so I'm kind of at the epicenter of all the great fishing brands. You know, we've got, you know, Pure Fishing south of me. We've got some Normark companies right here in Minnesota, rod companies with St. Croix right there in Wisconsin. I mean, there's a lot of people all in the Midwest that kind of make up this fishing industry that we love. So it's kind of a fun place to be. And it's also, you know, I'm in a great spot because there's so many niche markets within fishing. Obviously, bass fishing is probably the big umbrella that, you know, covers the most stuff or the most people. But we've got crappie fishing, we got cat fishing, and obviously where I'm at, we got ice fishing. So, you know, I get to do a lot of fun stuff with the ice fishing category and then all the other categories that kind of go with it. So I do really enjoy it.
That's fantastic, man. No, I think that's really what's cool to me as I, you know, like I'm a hardcore bass fishing guy, and that's kind of always be like my I guess wheel of the outdoors or of the fishing industry. But now like I can attribute LiveScope to myself going and finding new species, enjoying chasing walleye, enjoying going and catch crappie. Like, you know what I mean? It has taught me so much more than bass fishing, and it has made it like, I have just as much fun picking up a dinky rod with a jig on it and going and scoping crappie as I do bass fishing at times. And it's a great way to go fill the freezer and bring kids out, anything like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is I always kind of say I've been able to be with Garmin during the glory days. So like when I first started, you know, the inland category, Garmin does a great job with offshore boats. We've got a great presence in Florida and that kind of stuff. But we really kind of started moving towards like inland fishing, bass fishing, walleye fishing, and that kind of stuff. And, you know, like during my time at Garmin so far, I mean, we came out with Force Trolling Motor. We came out with the Echo Map line. We came out with the Striker line. And then LiveScope. So being able to watch all of this stuff kind of come to fruition has been just amazing. And I mean, I remember literally sitting on a lake, a frozen lake, because I'm an ice guy, and, you know, sitting there with some of the very first LiveScope units that were there in live sonar and just being so mind blown by like what I was looking at, what I was seeing. I mean, you got to imagine when I was a kid, I'm not an old guy, I'm 37 years old, but when I'd go ice fishing as a kid, we'd have a flasher. And you'd see a line on a wheel and you're trying to match those lines up, and, you know, somewhere in the $150 to $350 price range to all of a sudden, here we are at $3,250 for an ice bundle that people can't get enough of. And I mean, you're watching fish, you're seeing the different species and how they're relating to structure. I remember sitting on Mille Lacs Lake, one of the very first times actually, and just seeing the migration of walleyes that would go on the flats and off the flats morning and night. I mean, it's like something you would never imagine that would happen. Like we kind of think we know what's going on under the water, but in reality, till we've seen it with LiveScope, you just have no idea of what's going on.
Oh, dude, I call it the fishing show lie detector now. Like yes. It's like, you think back through the shows that we used to watch and, you know, hey, the fish are in this gut and they're in this for this region. And you know, this is why these fish are setting up here. And now, like, you know, I scan out in the middle of the channel and there's 4 pounders in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And I, you know, and it's like, dude, this is all like, we cannot anymore justify where a fish is, because like you can make assumptions and start to put stuff together. But dude, there are still just random fish in the middle of nowhere that you're like, I don't know why that fish is there, but I'm going to go catch him. And it's like, that to me, it has changed the game from like when people like to talk what they know they're talking about. Like we all fish at a high enough level and look at enough stuff where I'm like, that guy's full of crap. That guy's full of crap. Like, nope, that fish is there and he doesn't know why it's there.
Yes, 100%. It's funny. I sell, you know, you got people always wanting to get Garmin in their boat, LiveScope and stuff. And like the number one category is always guides, because it's like they take people out fishing and they're like, okay, this can prove there's fish down there. They're just not biting or you're not catching them. And it always makes me laugh how often I hear that from a fishing guide, you know?
Oh gosh, 100%. That's a good point. Just be like, look, we've had a lot of looks today, guys. Right? Like that's the name of it. Is like,
yes,
we've had if I can put it on, especially on a pressured body of water, if I can put it in front of 100, right? Like a good day is catching 20 of them, 15. You know what I mean? Like that means they're eating. Like it can be just so tough from that perspective of like, you know, and then there's days when it's like every other one is eating and it's great. But like on those days where there's sometimes when it takes, you know, it might be 5 out of 100. So yeah, it's just a numbers game, sticking as many of them as you can.
For sure. And I hear that all the time. It's like, well, live scope, you know, live sonar, that's cheating. Oh my gosh. Like you're just going to take all the fish out of the lake. And it's like, well, at the end of the day, they're still fish. They still have fins and you still have to catch them. So like finding them, yeah, we can do that a lot faster. We can get on the fish. Some days you can catch them and you know, you can get on them right away. Some days you can throw every bait you own past a fish and they just ain't going to bite it, you know?
Right. Right. And I'm still trying to figure out some of these, I'm very proficient. I'm not going to go like I got to fish behind Spencer Shuffield in a Toyota series, way up in the Northeast one time on Champlain. And it was like, Wow, this is impressive. Like I thought I was good at live scope and it was like, wow, this dude is wicked, right? Like world-class at it. So it has made me focus even more on it after kind of seeing that, but I feel like I'm very proficient with it. And anymore too, like obviously Idaho, there's some really big smallmouth lakes and some sneaky spots. And I was up just this 2 weekends ago on a place that I didn't think I could get on. Water temp was like 41. It's really cold, but it was a blast. And I was out chasing fish around on live scope and my buddy behind me was catching some fish where I was watching his stuff, right? Like I was watching his bait and everything. And I never saw those fish. And so that's another thing too, is like some of these fish, man, that get in those guts and they're just, especially smallmouth in the winter, just so tight to the bottom. Yep. There's some that's like, man, I looked really hard before he made that cast, you know, where I'm casting at one that I can see, or maybe I see that little bit of difference. And so there's still Mother Nature finds a way to kind of protect us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's some fish that are a little bit more susceptible to live scope, and like smallmouth is going to be one of them. Crappies is another one of them, where they just like they make themselves easier to see. Crappies are suspended in the water column. They're usually in a bigger school of fish, so you can find them a lot easier. But the crappies are also like you can't just sit on top of them anymore like you used to. Like you said, Mother Nature takes its course and these fish are moving, and you know they hear that boat coming, they see those live scopes coming, and they're like, okay, let's move on, and they don't just sit there like they did. So I mean, as the technology changes, the fish are going to change with it for sure.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. And that's just the name of it. But gosh, I think it has done incredible things for our education. It's probably my biggest argument whenever, you know, there's so much drama around forward facing sonar. But to me, it's like the education of seeing what these fish do, seeing how they react to bait, seeing how fast a fish moves in the winter, man, chasing a bait. That is probably one of the biggest things. Was like back in the day, it was like, oh, you better take 30 seconds between pauses with that jerk bait or that jig, you better not move it. And it's like, man, sometimes you like this happened. Water temp was 41 degrees. I was throwing a jerk bait, and you know this fish is falling. And I'm like, okay, he's not going to eat. Went to reel it up, dude, and that fish went. I mean, screaming, right? And it's like people say that like this, you know, got to be slowed. It's just it's mind blowing what we get to see underwater.
For sure, and the other thing too that I always like to mention is like youth. Like, I mean, my daughter's a prime example. Like, they'd go out in the boat with me. They'd maybe fish for a few minutes and then they'd kind of be over it, you know? Well, now I've got like the big screen with live scope sitting there and she'll sit there and throw at different crappies all day long. And it's like not only just watching the fish, having her continue to fish longer, but like the learning of like casting accuracy and casting distances. And like, there's so much good that can come from it as well for like our kids and getting kids into it. Not that, like, you know, there's a fine line of like too much technology, take that stuff away, but also like using technology that they know to get them into stuff like the outdoors, I think is super important. And like it's worked with my kids for sure. I mean, they love to go fishing now because of the live scope, which is pretty sweet.
Right. Now it keeps you so engaged and it's a blast, man. And I mean, and that's kind of, it's what's interesting to me is you're starting to see, and I'd love to get your take on this being on the front end of the Garmin scene of things. It's like you're starting to see now professional leagues question on how much technology they're going to allow on boats, right? Like, and we're seeing it. Like, I'll be the first to admit, I now practicing would rather get up and drop the trolling motor and fish through an area, scope around through an area, than I would side scan. Like, yeah, that is the level of where I feel more confident with that. And so now you're seeing guys throw live scopes, you know, on the back of the boat, right? Scanning both sides. You see guys running multiple scopes on the trolling motor. And then maybe another one that is on a turret because of wind situation. So you're starting to see like really a high level of technology and a high cost going into these boats, especially at the pro level. I mean, what's your take on that? Do you foresee leagues making changes? Do you feel like, man, they're going to leave this thing wide open? What's kind of your position?
I don't know. I feel like that's kind of a tough one because, like, personally, obviously, I'm like, okay, you see the technology is going farther and farther and farther. It's just like everything. Like, look at all the cameras your truck has in it nowadays. Like, at what point can we not just back up a truck without a camera anymore or side cameras or whatever, you know? So it's just like it's not just the fishing industry. And the hard part is like, I mean, I've seen what LiveScope has done for the ice fishing category where I'm at, like how many more people and more kids and more money is brought into the sport. So it's kind of hard to limit it too, because it's like, okay, bass is a lot more fun to watch when I'm watching guys, you know, throwing a jerk bait and watching that fish scoot after that bait on his screen. And, you know, at the Bassmaster Classic, they had, you know, live sonar hooked up to Gussie's boat and we're watching him catch these smallmouth. And it's like, at some point, like it helps grow the sport. So, you know, different categories, you know, it might be hard for them to look at getting rid of something like that just because it is bringing people into the sport. It's bringing money into the sport, which is also important. But I think us as fishermen, we just need to make sure that we aren't over, you know, harvesting. And, you know, obviously in bass, it's a lot of catch and release, but like crappie fishing, walleye fishing, like whatever it happens to be, you know, we need to look at the limits or we need to look at catch rates. Like, are they changing? Like, there's a lot of talk and a lot of speculation, but is it really changing things? Like, that's the hard part. So, like, you know, I think we just need to do our due diligence of, you know, making sure that we're protecting our resource and preserving our resource, but also growing the sport and growing the industry, because that's important as well, as we know what kind of world we live in nowadays. And it seems like the outdoors is continuing to be threatened and starting to decrease. So, you know, it's kind of a juggling act that I think we need to work through for sure.
Right. And to me, that's, I think you hit the nail on the head from the actual catch rates and in that perspective, because you're seeing the same thing in the hunting movement right now, especially out west of like, you're seeing rifles that are extremely capable at 1,000 yards, at 700 yards, right? And it's like, at what point are we, you know, are we going too far with some of this technology? And so you're seeing it across all brands. You're starting to see bows that are ridiculous, right? That are
crossbows nowadays. I mean,
right, muzzle loaders.
Yeah, we in Minnesota, we weren't allowed to have scopes on our muzzle loader. Then we got scopes on our muzzle loaders. We weren't allowed to use crossbows. Now everybody can use a crossbow. So like it's absolutely the same thing through all, you know, all categories. But at the end of the day, we need to make sure we are protecting the deer herd. We're protecting that fish. You know, I don't know. It's that is a tough one. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think at least right now, and what we've Bailey and on the Serious Angler podcast had a biologist on talking about some of these studies done with catch rates, right? And there was not a definitive difference in catch rates between someone using forward facing sonar on a body of water versus not, as far as the data of the general public. And I think that like that certainly can be the case too, because the you got to think through of like the average fisherman that's going out to go fish and fun fish. It's like there's a big difference on like, A, sometimes someone using live bait and smoking the crap out of the crappie next to me, you know, he's probably catching more than when I'm going and targeting direct fish, right? And so it's kind of like there's always going to be these differences. And also I think these fish get smarter and tougher to catch, and to where there's always going to be that balancing out. It's more about like we have to manage it the same way that we manage things from a just paying attention to these resources and how many fish people are keeping. It's the same thing with the deer herd. It's the same concept in my eyes of things.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, catching more fish isn't necessarily always a bad thing. So like, as long as we're catching those fish, you know, but we're doing our due diligence of protecting them as well. Like, I mean, that's great. We don't need to catch a limit every time and bring a limit home every time, but I sure love to go out and catch 20 bass every time I go out, you know? So I'm going to utilize every tool I can when it comes to baits, electronics, boats. I mean, our boats have 250, you know, motors on them now. We used to be 150, you know, we've got poles, we got trolling motors, we got anchor lock. The technology is just unbelievable. So we're going to utilize all that. It's just a matter of making sure we, you know, don't overdo it when it comes to the fish, I guess.
Right. Right. Yeah, no. And I mean, and the market can support that. Like, people love technology. People love that advancement. I mean, we all do with everything. And it's just, and especially, you know, our younger generations, I'm in my late 20s, but it's like, dude, that stuff I feed off of. Like, if I can find some, you know, like these new rifle calibers that are coming out, the PRCs, it's like, they're just a little bit better, right? Yeah. Than what previous calibers were. But I'm like, that's what I want. Like, that's exactly what I want. Like, that's slight changes in technology to make things better. I enjoy that.
100%. It's funny because, like, I haven't been in the industry that long. Like, 9 years I've been doing this, right? And when I first started, I was selling 7-inch graphs all the time. Like, someone was coming in, they had a really nice, you know, Ranger 620 walleye boat, and they'd maybe be going bigger screens, but like 7-inch was kind of the standard, you know. And then it started to shift where it was like, okay, everybody's buying nines. Well, now we're kind of at that 10 mark, and you know, it seems like 12s, and now you're even hearing of all these 16s on, you know, more the guys are even more serious. So it's like, it's just, it's crazy to see that progression and just how it continues to push, you know.
It is, man. And that's the question I do have too, is like, you're starting to see these screens and these brands kind of come into the space for mega screens, right? Like 22-inch just screens, 16-inch screens, and like these really big screens in their own right. And I mean, thinking about through like the detail on LiveScope, I mean, that kind of stuff has, cause Garmin's biggest screen's a 16, right? Isn't that?
The biggest, like, we make up to a 27-inch screen, right? Okay. But that's more for like an offshore boat or something like that. Like, a 16 is going to be the biggest that we would have like a bail mount for, or we could mount it, you know, on the dash or on the front of the boat.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Got it. I mean, what's your take on that? Like, as we see screen sizes just getting massive. And then also, like, when I saw some of these companies start making these that were not original graph companies, like, is there like, are they able to do that, or brands trying to sue them? You know, I'm not trying to like pick anything out of you, but like, I thought that was kind of crazy. Like, you hadn't seen that until these last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool. And I think LiveScope really is helping drive that. You know what I mean? So like, we started out where we'd have a couple of graphs on the dash of the boat, maybe one up front. And then we started adding another one up front, and you'd run your chart, you'd run your side imaging, you know, maybe some down imaging, something like that. But now, as we've got LiveScope, you pretty much need a dedicated screen on the front of the boat, walleye guy, bass guy, whatever it is anymore. You have one dedicated screen to LiveScope. And, you know, like, I feel like we've reached a point in the technology. Obviously, Garmin's going to continue to push, and so are the other brands, that where there's going to be new stuff. But I feel like we have reached an area, like when side imaging first came out. And then we went through all of these years where we just kind of made improvements to side imaging, where it got more clear, more range, all that kind of stuff. So I feel like we're probably at a point like that with live sonar, where we've got live sonar and we're going to continue to improve on that. Well, that means bigger screens, clearer screens, better transducers, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's part of that trend where we're seeing, okay, I mean, I see a lot of guys now with a 16 on the front of the boat that are using it just as a dedicated LiveScope screen. And then, you know, obviously there's some third-party companies now making just screens, where you got to buy, like, from us, one of our more premium units, like a GPS map unit with HDMI out, and you'll see these guys running a big screen from one of those third-party companies on the front of the boat. And I mean, some of that stuff's pretty cool. I mean, it's just helping, like I said, drive the industry, drive business. You know, obviously I work for Garmin. I want Garmin to succeed and do well, but we also want the industry to do well. So I think, you know, when you see a lot of that stuff, I mean, of course, we'd want you to buy a Garmin screen, you know, but being able to just help, you know, drive the industry, drive that live sonar, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's all great stuff. It's all
right.
It's competition just, you know, drives, you know, ingenuity and, you know, helps the engineers just, you know, push even harder to come up with new stuff. So I think it's all good stuff for sure.
No doubt. Well, yeah. And I think one thing I do appreciate about how Garmin, you know, like it's frustrating as a consumer to spend all this money on electronics and then like the new one comes out. Right. And you're like, gosh, dang it. You know? And so it's always that thought process of like, oh man, do I have the money, A, and then B, is it worth the upgrade in these situations? Something that I really liked how Garmin has done things was, I had the LVS 32 transducer on the front of my boat and it was great. And then literally after that trip of looking at an LVS 34 on Spencer Shuffield's and a couple of guys' boats at that open, or I guess it was a Toyota series, but like, I was like, this thing is better. Like, wow, this is clearer. This is crisper. Like I need one of those. Right. But I didn't have to change my black box. I was able to just get the transducer. Yeah. That was incredible to just slap that right in. And so anyways, like stuff like that to where it's just a slight upgrade to me, was better than having to go through a new screen with a new black box, a new transducer. You know what I mean?
And I think that's important. And I think a lot of the companies try to do a good job of that. You know, it's just like your iPhone. So like, you know, I just got the new iPhone 15, right? By next year, there's going to be a 16 that's going to have some feature that would be just that much better. And unfortunately, electronics are like that. So we got to keep pushing to stay relevant and continue to sell more product. And as a consumer, it's frustrating. I understand that. But like the thing that we try to do the best of, especially at Garmin, is we always try to, like you said, like we try to support our customers that have purchased stuff in the past. Now, every so many years, there's going to be a major, you know, hardware change. But in between, we're going to try to make it so you may lose a color palette, you may lose a feature, but your products are going to continue to work when we add new stuff. And, you know, like, so what we're going to announce this year at ICAST, we already know it. We already have made it. We're already probably in production on it. What we're going to make next year at ICAST, you know, same thing. Like we already know that product. And so like we try to do our best to like ease people through all of that stuff and really backdate what we do. And, you know, and that's why, you know, software updates, you know, people always talk about those on marine stuff, it's always important to do software updates because you'll get added features and added things. Like when you switched from a 32 to the 34, you probably just had to do a software update. You're good to go. So I feel like Garmin does a pretty dang good job of that, you know, allowing the customer to be able to upgrade, you know, piece by piece. Because I mean, you go buy a brand new boat nowadays. I was at the Minneapolis Boat Show here a couple weeks ago. And I mean, you're looking at some of these boats and they're higher end boats, but I mean, you're talking over $100,000 for a boat. You're talking $20,000 for electronics. I mean, we want you to make that purchase and be happy with that purchase, obviously. So, you know, have something that'll last you for a little while at least.
Totally. Yeah. And no, I mean, it's crazy how pricey all of this can get. And it's, at the highest competition levels, especially, it's needed in my opinion. Yeah. Like you are not competing.
Well, you look at bass guys, right? That are fishing bass or whatever. And I mean, how many guys don't have an electronic sponsor now because they were running whatever brand. And then they're like, okay, I have to have live sonar. I have to have a live scope because I'm going to make a heck of a lot more money winning a tournament than I am being sponsored by someone else. And so you almost have to go that route nowadays. Like you got to stay on top of the technology, especially to stay competitive. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's been quite interesting to see how much the technology has driven some of that stuff the last few years.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And I mean, I think it too, it's going to continue to change. And I had this conversation with Rick Pierce at Basscat, but it's going to continue to change the way boats are built, right? Like we're adding so much weight to the front of these things that, you know, we're not getting the speeds that we used to get out of boats because there's so much drag. There's so much weight on the front of that thing, trolling motor, all this stuff. And then not to mention you're adding all the batteries, right? To run all this stuff all day long. So it's changing the dynamic. I think it's going to change the front end of boats, just to have multiple screens. You know, I've been a two screen guy up front for the longest time, and now I'm hearing of guys, you know, running a live scope sideways, maybe a saltwater live scope to be able to, like, I mean, do some crazy stuff. And it's like, man, that I would need a third screen for that, right? It's just, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I'm up here in the north, right? So there's a lot of walleye guys. And traditionally in the past, a walleye guy, you'd sit in the back of a tiller boat, you'd troll lead core crankbaits, or you'd drag live bait or something like that. And now, like, all these walleye tournaments are being won with live scope, and you're basically in the front of the boat bass fishing for walleyes. And it's changing everything. Like, when I was at the boat show, trying to think, I think it was Skeeter has a new WX 2060 out, and the front of that boat is designed to stand up front and throw baits now. I mean, there's recessed footwells. Like, we never had foot pedals in walleye boats. We'd run the remote from the back of the boat. So, I mean, it's completely changing the way people approach fishing, and changing fishing, really, you know, kind of as we know it, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, boats are absolutely going to be different in the future than they are now.
Yeah, no, that's crazy to me to think that walleye stuff, because you always, I mean, again, I'm a very novice walleye fisherman. If I find a group of walleye, I'm wrecking them on live scope. I'm gonna have a great time. Yeah. But like, you watch the old FLW tour days of walleye stuff. I used to watch some of that, and yeah, it was always guys trolling in the back of the boat. The stuff, like, so where I grew up in northern Colorado, we spent a lot of time on Lake McConaughey, right, or Lake Wahi in South Dakota, like. And a lot of guys, a big thing there was spinner baits. Like, they'd troll big spinner baits through the treetops and all that kind of stuff. And now it's like, yeah, man, are those guys winning now, getting up and scoping those fish?
Well, it's funny because, like, okay, so we used to troll spinners and crawlers, and we'd troll chubs a lot, you know, here in Minnesota in tournaments. And I was doing this a long time ago. When I first started, I'd fish some tournaments, and I had a Panoptics transducer, and it was a transom mounted transducer. So it was live sonar, but basically just down mode off the back of the boat.
Okay.
And we'd be rigging chubs, and I'm on Leech Lake. I'm in about 26 feet of water, and we're going along, and I see this giant walleye on 2D, and he's up high 4 or 5 feet off the bottom. You see him on down imaging, and you're like, okay, this is a big fish. He's going to eat. Like, that's what we always watched for years of walleye fishing. And I look on that Panoptic screen, and that fish takes and he shoots straight to the bottom, off to the side, about 5 feet off the side of the boat, and just sits there. I move my hold my rod over as far as I can to that fish, and that fish eats.
No way.
And it's like, it was like, and we ended up, I think we ended up like fifth or something in that tournament, but it was just like a light bulb went off, and it's like, these fish are spooking from the boat, even in 25 feet of water. And, you know, for years, I'm just watching 2D sonar thinking I'm going over all these fish. It doesn't bother them. They're used to boats. Your baits are fine. But, like, in reality, these fish are kind of shooting down and to the side. Well, now with live scope on a pole and on the trolling motor, you're able to see that and follow these fish. But it was just like, I mean, that was so, like, mind-boggling back then to be able to see a fish and think that it moved, I guess. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Unbelievable, like, what we've learned and how we approach fishing just because of, you know, having that live sonar.
Oh man, it's so cool. It's crazy. And the other thing that I noticed, that I have learned to really appreciate is seeing, especially practicing for tournaments, is like seeing how many fish are there, especially in a smallmouth body of water, of like, okay, there's a boulder over there. I'm going to throw over there. And then A, I don't have to necessarily catch that fish. I can just watch and follow a bait out. And B, if I do catch one, I will let that fish hang by that boulder. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, there's 12 with him. Like, yep, we're going to come back to this boulder. Like, there's a bunch of them, you know? Like, and so that's been cool to me, is to see how many, you know, it's just so exciting to be like, oh my gosh, look how many are there. Look how many are there. Like, you know, it's team fishing, all that kind of stuff. Like, it has made it so fun to both just be super. And it's anticipating a bite the same way it would be for like top water, but it's just you're getting to watch that through the water column. It's not just on top water.
Well, and on top of it, I mean, now they're literally making baits to fish with live sonar. You know, like, I literally spent a bunch of last summer fishing Ned rigs for walleyes. I mean, that doesn't even make sense, right? But you're able to watch this little turd go down, you know, slowly, and those fish follow it right to the bottom. Who'd have ever thought a walleye would do something like that, you know? And now, you know, we got the power switch, and I'm fishing that thing, and it's like, it's designed to fish with live sonar. I mean, there's just so many things that are coming from it that, I mean, are pretty cool, honestly.
Yeah. No, I agree. And something that I've always said, and this is from a budget perspective of things too, and I'd love to get your take. Like, you see all this, you see big fancy electronics, multiple screens, all that stuff. Like, man, I'm being dead serious here. If I have a small John boat or whatever it is, and I want one graph on the boat, like, I'm sticking a graph up front on the trolling motor, and I'm going to have, like, seriously, like, I'm going to put a 10 inch live scope, you know, something like that. And like, I'm going to catch more fish with that, in my opinion, like mapping and all that stuff. It's great to have two units. Don't get me wrong. But like, if there's an upgrade to be made in my head right now, that's where it is.
Well, and the other thing too, like, you know, I get a lot of young guys that come up and they got a small John boat or something like that, that they're trying to set up. I mean, you literally can run live scope on a 6-inch unit now. So like, you know, back in the day, once again, you know, like, the technology was higher. It's getting more affordable. When we went from the 32 to the 34, the price barely went up. I mean, we probably could have, you know, had it even higher, but like, it's expensive to get into it, but you can do it with a smaller head unit. So like, the price is going to continue to come down. And now even like Panoptics, like the PS22 transducer is still awesome. It doesn't have the clarity, doesn't have the definition, I guess, of like a live scope, but you could buy a Panoptics PS22 transducer, still have live sonar, and, you know, still have that as an option. So I think, like, you know, the guys that are kind of afraid of it because it's expensive, I mean, there are options out there right now for those customers for sure.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think that's the other thing is you see a good amount of used, you know, older units all the time that come on the market, right?
Yeah, there was like, the market was just flooded with 32s there for a while, and like, great deals on 32s, great deals.
And that's kind of like where, so I still have my 32, and I just will travel with me across the country as my backup in case I have something that happens, right? But this is a question for you, especially being the ice guy, is like, I used to ice fish a lot in Colorado, moved up here to Idaho, and I'm like, man, I want to be in close to some incredible perch fishing. I want to go get out on the ice, but I don't want to have to rip my 34 off of my boat. Right. So, I mean, is there like an ice bundle that you would recommend to just plug in with that? I would just need a black box and a unit, or I could probably just take the unit off of, you know, with the quick disconnect of the Echo Map.
That's a cool thing with Garmin, right? So like, the quick disconnect makes it super easy to go from season to season. Really, the hardest thing to move is your black box. Like, if you have that all wired in the boat, then it's nice getting another black box. But like, you can move everything back and forth. And the other thing, like I was just talking to PS22, I mean, if all you're fishing is crappies through the ice, and honestly, even walleyes, like, a PS22 does not require a black box. And so you can hook that up to a 7-inch unit in a small bag. I mean, that to me is the most overlooked ice fishing transducer or tool that exists, because it's inexpensive. It's super portable, easy to use. So like, I think that's a great option. But yeah, I mean, live scope, you could really pair it with anything. I like the LVS 32 for ice fishing because it's a smaller transducer, fits in a 7-inch hole.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
And ice fishing, you're in an aquarium. Like, it's a controlled environment. Nothing is moving, hopefully, except for the fish, right? So literally, like, everything looks good on a 32 for ice fishing. So
that's a good point. All right, sweet. So I just need to get kind of the like setup.
A kit.
And then probably just another black box if need be, just to not have to rip it out of my boat. That doesn't sound bad at all. That's awesome, man. I'll need to get some of that stuff for this ice season, because that's something that's got my mind with these perch are getting back through. I mean, I still ice fish this year when I was back visiting in Colorado, but catching trout and all that kind of stuff, you know.
It's you definitely live in the right spot, that's for sure, if you want big perch.
For sure. Well, man, you were headed out west, you mentioned, just snowmobiling. Here is crazy, dude. Like, I have snowmobiled with friends and that kind of a thing growing up, but I've never had snowmobiles. I've never done any of that. But I keep meeting folks from the Midwest that are like, oh yeah, I run over to Wyoming every year. And sometimes we'll dump into Idaho. We'll go to Montana. Like, you guys are just ate up with it, and the powder skis, all that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no snow here at home at all. So like, normally I would have probably gone to like the UP of Michigan or Northern Minnesota. Oh, yeah, but there's nothing here. I went to the Bighorns. It's only like 14-hour drive. So we literally ran out there just for the weekend, which I'm getting a little too old to do that now, because when I got home, I was a little tired for work that next morning. But it's 14 hours ain't bad. I'm driving to Texas on Sunday, and that's a 14-hour drive. And so like, and I think doing this job, you just kind of get used to it. You know, I think it's what, February 2nd today, and I've stayed in a hotel 25 nights this year so far. Wow. So I think every night, four nights. So lots of travel this time of year.
Yeah. A lot of shows and man, that's my take too, is like same for tournament fishing, for ranch real estate. It's like, man, there's a lot of driving involved. So anything under 14 hours to me, like, that's a day trip. We're good. This is a day tripper. And when I get past that now, I'm starting to get a little annoyed when it's past that. But like, if it's a 14-hour day, like, I'll rip through that. I'll get up early. We'll get there. No big deal.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
That's sweet, man. Well, dude, let's talk a little bit, just because you have all those whitetails back. We're talking a little off air. So you mentioned that you've got a farm in Wisconsin, right?
Yep.
Is that where it was? Okay.
Yep.
So talk a little bit about just how that all came about and some of the improvements you've made. What did things look like to go buy a farm for the hunting?
Well, so, you know, backing up a little bit, I grew up, you know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. My mom and dad worked real hard and always was into hunting. My dad always made a point. He worked construction, but when hunting season came, he always made a point that he was going to take us hunting. It was really important. It was always a thing that we kind of did. And, you know, we didn't have places to go, you know, so we kind of hunted state land. It just sucked, because it's like, there's 500,000 deer hunters in Minnesota and you're trying to find a spot and every tree has a person in orange up in it, you know? So it was like, oh man, like that was just my goal, is someday I'm going to own my own land. Like, that was super important to me. And so, you know, we worked really hard and was able to buy my first piece of hunting property, which it was like kind of run down. It had an older cabin on it, had an older pole shed, needed some work. So I was able to find that. And that was kind of before all this boom when everybody was buying and selling stuff like crazy. But so I was able to buy that and I put a bunch of work into it, fixing up the hunting property. Like, I'm not good at carpentry. I'm not good at, you know, fixing that kind of stuff. But I put in some food plots. I had some amazing deer there. I had a giant non-typical the first year that I owned the place. That neighbor ended up killing. So that was kind of a sad story, but shot a nice buck there, got a lot of good deer going, a lot of good stuff on that one. So I was able to sell that one and actually do a 1031 exchange when I sold it and roll it into my next farm, which I bought a place in Wisconsin. That sort of is kind of the same story, where, you know, it's a more premium land. It's closer to the cities. It's kind of in that bluff country along the Mississippi River there. I'm just north of Buffalo County, Wisconsin, which is pretty well known for big whitetails. But it was a sugar farm. So there is plastic hoses running for miles and miles all over that property. And so, you know, I originally bought it thinking, okay, I'm going to fix this place up, clean all these sugar lines up. I put in kind of a parking pad. I've put in about 4 acres of food plots, brought in a dozer, and like, you know, just kind of doing stuff as I can afford, and I'll go and cut the trees myself and then burn everything and then bring a guy in to pop the stumps and kind of working through that. But I've sort of fallen in love with that place and the neighbor. So I don't know if I'll ever be able to get rid of the Wisconsin one now. Yeah. So I may have to, but the goal, the life goal here would be to have that Wisconsin farm and then have my farm in Minnesota just across the river. So I can wake up in the morning and decide which state I'm going to hunt. Right now I have a lease, but it's about an hour and 40 minutes away. So it's like, you gotta really make the decision, like, cause you're committed then, but.
Sure. So you're paying attention to, if you can find another place long term, right there across the border. That's an underrated thing, I think, because
super,
you see guys like all over here, right? Like, I work with some clients that are big time hunters, and it's the same kind of deal. They want to go to this ranch, and then they want to go to this ranch, and then they want to go to this ranch. But like, if you have a ranch on the Colorado and the Wyoming border, you've got two sets of tags, man. You can decide, and seasons open at different times. Like that's really neat to me.
Yeah. I mean, in Wisconsin, I could shoot two bucks on my place in Wisconsin, and on the lease I have in Minnesota, it's a CWD zone. I could shoot $3 with, in Minnesota. And then I went down to Texas and shot a whitetail last year. So like it was looking to get real expensive for the taxidermy bill last year, but I ended up only shooting one in Texas and I only shot $2. So it wasn't too bad.
That's awesome, man. No, that's really cool. So in the sugar farm, so like where I'm from in Colorado, and even there's some in Idaho too, but there's like sugar beets. Like that's a thing, right? Like sugar beets. And then you see like cane sugar, like the cane stuff, right? In the Southeast. So what do you mean by sugar farm there?
So this is actually like, it's 80 acres of all sugar maple trees. And so you actually put a cap in the tree. And normally in the springtime, the sap's probably going to start running here. It's 50 degrees out this year, but you put a tap in the tree and then they'll run a line from that tap. And like all of these trees that have taps into them will run into a main line. And then the main line ran down the bluff to the bottom of my land. There's like a 300-foot bluff. It'd run to the bottom. There's a holding tank down there where all the syrup ran to. And then they'd pump it back up the hill where they come and pick it up with like big, almost like a milk truck, you know, like would go from a dairy farm. And I mean, it's crazy. You drive around the area there, in, you know, Dunn County, Southern Dunn County is where I'm at. And like, there's maple lines running all over the place and all these sugar shacks and stuff. It's been quite interesting to learn about. Like, I didn't know much about it until I kind of got to that area, but it's really cool. And then of course, you know, they sell sugar maple at all the local, you know, places. So it's good stuff. I've tried a bunch of it and it is good stuff.
That's really cool. So how did this property come on your radar then? Was it like, hey, I see the opportunity here to turn this into a deer hunting place. Did you know there was big deer on it, or did you just know the area? Like what was the insight from you?
So I worked with a real estate agent that it kind of specializes in whitetail hunting properties. Yep. And so I kind of partnered with them on the selling of my property. And I always tell people this, like, so if you are looking to sell your property and even buy a property, if you, especially hunting properties, when you work with those type of people, like especially during times that are good, but even now as things slow down a little bit, they'll have buyers that are looking for specific stuff. And so the place I had in central Minnesota, like we went to the market, I had multiple offers, like dozens of offers on this place, way above asking price. Wow. And the guy that got it actually is a really cool guy and was someone that actually I knew and followed me online. And so he knew what was going on in that farm. He knew what I put into it. And so working with that like whitetail type of real estate agent just really, I think, benefited me because you're working with the right clientele. You see farms every once in a while, they get listed from a guy who normally sells townhomes, and they just don't have the knowledge or the ability to market a good piece of property correctly to deer people. And so worked with him on the selling of mine. And then in turn, they had this property kind of in their back pocket where, hey, we were working with this guy. He was looking at selling. So at first it wasn't on the market. Then it kind of went awry as nothing ever goes perfectly, right? So then it got listed and I had to get into a little bit of a bidding war, but ended up picking this place up, I think still for a decent price. So it all worked out in the end. But yeah, that's kind of how it came about. And, you know, just having the right agent that you work with and a network of people, I think is super important.
Dude, yeah. Another thing I've seen do really well as far as the properties go is documenting wildlife, man. Like on places like this, like if you have trail camera pictures and you're paying attention, you do have the shots of the deer that you have killed off of that place. Like I've seen so many guys flip stuff that I've been super impressed with where it was the side of a mountain in Colorado, right? That you're like, you know, the original owners, this was passed down in the family, didn't really think anything of it. And then they cut a road on it. They turn it into a little bit of a hunting place. They kill a couple of elk on it. And then it's like, boom, dude, they just sold that thing for double of what they paid for it. Because people didn't realize the hunting capabilities until someone went in and did the work and hunted it.
Well, and that's where like social media is so powerful, especially when you're going to sell this stuff. So like, I kind of will go through and document, like, at the farm, this is what I'm doing. And like, it just helps people like envision themselves there. And like, you know, on my social media now, like I just did some stuff yesterday with one of the companies I work with. And it's like, hey, I'm down at the sugar farm and I'm doing this and doing that. And it's like, people watch the progression of this place as it goes through and they can envision themselves in there. It's almost like that lifestyle photography that's so popular in the outdoor industry. And I mean, I tell you what, it works. And then when you go to list the place for sale, I mean, you've got a complete documentation right there of, you know, everything that you've done and that you've seen and that goes on at that place. And pictures don't lie. I mean, I'm taking pictures with selfies with myself and the fawn deer laying right at the pole shed and the trail. Wow. I had trail cameras where you can perfectly see the cabin in the background. Like, you know, I really kind of knew what I would need when I went to sell this place, where there's no denying where those pictures were from and when they were from. You know, if you got a good property, you got a good property. So
no doubt. That's so cool, man. I love it. Well, I didn't expect that at all. Yeah. Getting on talking Garmin stuff, obviously, but this is cool because it's a passion of mine. Land's a big passion of mine and everything related to the hunting side of things. So
yeah,
great to hear your story there. Man, I guess the last thing I just want to talk about would just be 2024, going into 2024. Obviously, we've got ICAST coming this year, all kinds of, as usual, there's always going to be something new, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, where do you see electronics trending forward, and A, being on the sales side of things, obviously we've had a huge boom these last couple of years. Are things starting to slow down? Are they not? What's your kind of pulse on the electronics industry?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously the boom was unbelievable. Like the entire world shut down and went to the outdoors. And so camping, fishing, hunting, hiking, like it doesn't matter. Anything related to the outdoors had an extreme boom. Fishing was obviously one of those things. People had money and people had time. And so they bought fishing electronics like you wouldn't believe. And they went out and went fishing. So that was great. I will say that I don't want to sound like doom and gloom, but I thought things were going to be worse than they even were. So like, as we're kind of coming out of that, yeah, sure, sales are going to be down a little bit. Yeah. Cause the amount of people, you know, doing that stuff is less and the newcomers are less, but people go without a lot of stuff before they go without hunting and fishing stuff. And yeah. Like, I might not have a new truck, but I'm going to buy some 12 inch, you know, Echo Maps for the boat or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So like it's obviously down a little bit, but sales continue to do pretty dang good. I'm even surprised how well things have been going. And even kind of going into the boat shows this year, it was like, okay, boats are $100,000. Like a new 21-foot, you know, walleye boat is $120,000 to $140,000. Like interest rates are at 11%. Like, what's going to happen here? But surprisingly, things go pretty well. And for us on the electronic side, so like if new boats aren't being sold, a lot of times people are upgrading the boats that they already have.
Right.
So yeah, so as I've gone through the shows this year, it's actually been really busy. It's been really good. Sales have been pretty decent. So, you know, we just keep chugging along and kind of is what it is. And the great part being at Garmin, you know, kind of like you were talking earlier, but like we continue to innovate and continue to come out with new stuff. And it's that new product that helps drive sales as well. So, you know, right. I'm a sales guy. I don't know all the secrets that are going to be announced at ICAST because I tell everybody. But I do know Garmin's always working on something. And yeah, you can bet that ICAST, you know, will have something. And then, you know, the funny thing is I think it kind of took a little bit of a backseat during COVID because it was like, okay, we need to stay in stock. We just need to get people product and keep stuff on the shelves so people can buy something, they can go fishing, and we'll get back to like creating crazy cool things like Live Scope and the Kraken trolling motor and some of that stuff. But now I think we're getting back to that. So, you know, I can imagine this ICAST will be pretty good. The next ICAST will be really, really good. The next one will be even better than that. And I would assume with most companies in the fishing industry, it'll be about the same.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair statement. And that's what I've kind of heard in having the show and getting different reads from people is like, hey, things have kind of slowed down. Some people are like, ooh, we really overbought and now we're having issues at this point. Right. So you kind of see all that trend. I mean, and like you said, people like escape to hunting and fishing, right? Like in any economic environment. And that's something funny that Todd, who is the founder of Rec Lending and partner of the show, as he said one time, that was like, wow, this is so true. It's so funny. It's like, he's like, they can take the house, they can take the wife, but they're not taking the boat. Like, yeah. You know, he's like, people hold on to their boats. Like, you know, yeah. it's crazy to think through that kind of stuff, because it's true. Like, it's our passion, right? Like, all this stuff we love so much, even if it's a bad year for us in work or whatever else, it's like, yeah, I might not go on as many trips or fish as many tournaments, but I'm going to fish around home. Like, I'm going to do something from that perspective.
Yeah, people need that release. And that's what's so awesome about working in the outdoor industry, working in fishing, having buddies that are into fishing, hunting. We're all the same, right? So it's like, that's a release from life. No matter how bad things get at work or home or wherever else, like, we go fishing and you just kind of have that, like, you know, decompression. It just kind of brings you back to, you know, feeling whole again. So, I mean, it's so true, where you just see people like, they'll go through without a lot of stuff before they go without that hunting and fishing, for sure.
No doubt, man. No. Well, man, I think that's a great way to wrap things up. Thanks for making time on a Friday, man. And hope you have a great weekend. How can folks follow along with anything that you've got going on, Danny?
Yeah, so obviously you can follow all the Garmin stuff at Garmin's website and social media pages. Otherwise, you can follow me on Instagram, just Danny51Thompson. I'm always posting good deer hunting and fishing stuff on there. So,
awesome. Awesome. Well, dude, I'm going to follow along with your journeys with everything. And thanks, man, for taking the time out.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, man. We'll catch you later.